Awesome.
There we go.
So I guess I could start by telling you a little about myself and
sure.
my like interest in art therapy and mm-hmm. and yeah, and so basically I'm Sophia Kalemian. I'm a junior at the Hewitt School. And I started this organization called the Arno Art Club, and it's in honor of my I had an eighth grade advisor, and she passed away during like the beginning of the COVID pandemic.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's hard. Yeah.
And so she was one of like the people who inspired me to like create my club, and now it's like my organization, and it's and I like applied for this like grant called like the Riley's Way Call for Kindness last year, and like I won $2,000, and so it's just like she was like the person who kind of like started it all, helped me with like the beginning stages of it, and then she passed, so I thought a good thing to do would be to name it after her, to just like have something
for her. It's really wonderful to have a sort of honor her and have kind of a legacy. That's very impressive, and you know, it sounds like it can be something that really would, I looked up Hewitt School, so I knew something more about it, because I know there are a lot of private schools in New York, and it seems like there's a real emphasis on giving, of volunteerism, social justice, and giving, climate awareness. So it sounds like it fits right in there with that mandate. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And just a little bit about like my organization and club and stuff. And so it started in ninth grade, when I was in ninth grade, and it was online. So we just had weekly meetings, and we put a lot of emphasis on like partnering with like outside organizations, and we were able to like,
I just have like a one meeting with the one kid.
No.
Okay. Thanks. Sorry.
Yeah, and so that's okay. And so, yeah, so we started ninth grade, put an emphasis on partnering with organizations, like New York Presbyterian and this organization called Project Sunshine, and other things like that. And we like sent them cards and stuff. And it was a good way to do it, because it was like very like no contact involved. It was good for like the pandemic. But now, or like last year, we started doing like in-person meetings. And so we were able to do more hands-on things all together. So we made a sculpture in honor of Madame Arnault. And it was like a tree, a 3D sculpture of a tree. And we partnered with the first graders at our school. And they, in their art class, they made like red cardinals. And at the like commemoration for Madame Arnault, our like head of school said that her closest friends and she herself like saw Madame Arnault as like a red cardinal. And so we thought that it would be like fitting to just combine everything.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
And so this year, we're again putting a lot of emphasis on partnering with like service organizations, and also just spreading awareness as to how art is like beneficial, physically and emotionally and all of that. And so that's kind of how I got to researching about like art therapy and interviewing like professors and art therapists. And so, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you know, it's really a good time for you to be investigating all this, because the intersection of medicine and arts is kind of growing, this sort of arts and healing movement. There's a lot of big institutions who are beginning to really start to look at that and think about that, and to validate the what we call the expressive or the creative arts therapies, which are art, music, dance, movement, drama, and poetry. You can find therapists doing all of those modalities, and my specialty is art therapy. And then there are people who do what we call expressive arts therapies, excuse me, where they actually are trained in all of them. And they might use poetry and movement or drawing and music in a session, and they are trained to know when to use which. But no, my specialty is art therapy, and I've been teaching at NYU for about 12 years now. And I went through the NYU program. I graduated in 2003. And so I've been practicing art therapy for almost 20 years, and I've been teaching for 12 of those. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So my like first question is what initially drew you to art therapy?
Ah, it's a good one. I originally was a film editor. I went to art school and studied film at the Rhode Island School of Design. And I was working in the film business. And when I had children, it became harder. The film business is long hours. You might work on a movie or a TV show, and it's not always so conducive to taking care of kids. And art therapy wasn't something I really thought of. I was always a painter, an artist, writer. I've always made art all of my life. My husband mentioned it to me. He has a cousin who lives in Ohio who had been an art therapist for years. And he said, "Why don't you look into this?" And I was like, "No, I work in the film industry. Why would I want to do art therapy? That doesn't sound interesting to me." But I picked up a book in the local Barnes and Noble by a very well-known art therapist called Judy Rubin, who actually was the art lady on did you watch Mr. Rogers when you were a kid, or is that way beyond you? No, you probably watched Blue's Clues. Judy Rubin was the art lady on Mr. Rogers, which is a show that was on when I was a kid, and even when my kids were kids. And she is a well-known art therapist, and she wrote a book called Child Art Therapy. And I read that book, and in reading it, I realized how powerful art therapy could be. And it sort of changed my mind. And I was at home with my children, and my husband was like, "Why don't you think about another career?" And I then reconsidered the idea of looking into art therapy programs, and I applied to NYU and ended up going there. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is kind of just related to like the graduate art therapy program. So mm-hmm. What is the purpose of the graduate art therapy program at NYU, and is it considered like clinical or like research related?
Yeah, it's very much a clinical program. It was started, it was really founded by the two grandmothers of art therapy in the United States, Margaret Naumberg and Edith Kramer. Kramer really took it on in the 70s, but Margaret Naumberg more in the 50s and 60s. And they were both very involved with psychoanalysis and the idea of symbol interpretation, dream interpretation. Art therapy, its origins on the East Coast and at NYU in particular are very much psychoanalytic, as opposed to say humanistic or behavioral and psychoanalytic therapy really is looking at the what are the underlying causes of things? Is it your past? What is in the unconscious? You know, the idea that there are things underneath your behaviors, and that can be seen in dreams, and the art itself represents a kind of a dreamscape. What you put on the page is a projection of what's going on with you. And it's sometimes the things that are not yet in awareness or have language. They're verbal. They're nonverbal images. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And in terms of research, it's not a research program, but the graduates of the program, it's a master's program, must do a research project, a thesis project that's generally a case study. It's not a, you know, it's not research in the broader sense of needing to go through an internal review board and publishing research. There are members of the team, myself included, who the faculty who may be engaged in research, because I'm in a PhD program at the moment, and the head of the department now and the former head have all done some research. So there are research components, but it's mainly a clinical training program.
All right. And so in your opinion, how does art therapy differ from regular therapy?
Mm-hmm. And
what are
sure.
the benefits?
Yeah, that's a really good question and a sort of a basic starting place to talk about art therapy, because most regular therapy or traditional therapy is verbal therapy for the most part, although I'm a somatic therapist and I work a lot with the body and with somatic methods in addition to being an art therapist. So art therapy, like dance, music, poetry, drama, are the nonverbal therapies, meaning that people can express what they're thinking and feeling in visual form, in movement form, in music form. And in art therapy, it's visual form and in process of either working with paint or clay or fibers or collage or whatever. And it often can sort of bypass the thinking brain to get to places where words aren't there yet, right? It's sort of this emerging, you might not know that you're feeling angry, but it could come out on the page. And then you might be able to attach the words, well, yeah, I'm really angry about what my dad said to me earlier in the day or something like that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And so next is, what are some interesting results you've seen with art therapy? Mm-hmm. And is there like a certain example you have where art therapy was the best approach over like verbal therapy?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lots of examples and ideas there. My main history in art therapy and, you know, in my earlier career was working in foster care with kids who had experienced a lot of abuse and neglect and had trauma. And with trauma, a lot of times what happens to people is really held in the body and can't be talked about because it might be too overwhelming if they were, say, abandoned or physically abused or sexually abused even, that I was working with younger kids and early teens, and they, you know, they couldn't really always describe what had happened to them, right? So, and I remember an example of a boy who was, had a very violent father and an unpredictable mother, and in a situation where he had to be removed from the home, and he would try to build a house with me. We built a house as a way for him. And the relationships with the parents were not good. Like the mother was too over-involved with him and the dad was just violent. So making the house was a way to sort of explore how can he have his own room, the house being a symbol for maybe his relationship with his family. How can he have his own room? And that can be a safe space, right? And he wasn't even living with his family anymore, but it was a way to sort of symbolize the family. And then when it came to painting the house, he wanted red paint, and I gave him red paint. And red is the color that babies see next after black and white. So it has very primitive associations. And if you think about red, what do you think about? Blood? Sunsets, you know, it's a strong color, and often there are strong associations with it. And he painted that house with red paint in the session with me, and he was mesmerized by it and almost couldn't stop. And then at a certain point, you know, the whole table was just flooded with that red paint. In a way, it was as if he didn't have to say it, but he was sort of, in a way, reliving some of the violence that he'd witnessed or experienced, right? And so at the end of that session, I said to him, take your brushes. And there was a little bathroom off of my little art therapy room. And he spent probably about 20 minutes cleaning those brushes because he needed that process of cleansing. And I took the whole newspapers and all the mess of the red paint, and I picked it up all together and got rid of it, right? So that we had the red house, but that I helped with this process of cleaning. We didn't even talk about it, but he had the sense of me kind of helping him to contain this experience where he was really flooded with memories and feelings that were very strong for him. And the cleaning of the brushes was a way for him to sort of bring his body, his emotional state back into control after the session.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't even think about like cleaning the brushes and what that kind of symbolized as well. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so this is actually very related to what you just shared, but do you think art therapy has more of an impact on children and adolescents as opposed to like adults?
I think that art therapy is a really good way to reach adolescents because a lot of time in adolescence, the brain is going through such rapid change that some adolescents, and particularly adolescents who've experienced abuse earlier in life, they really lose language. Adolescents in general become somewhat inarticulate simply because of all that's going on in social life, in their brains, the body, everything's changing, right? So it becomes hard to articulate what they're feeling even because life is in such flux, especially with COVID, you know, it's been even worse. So I think it's particularly useful for adolescents and a good way for adolescents to feel safe in expressing, and children as well. But I've done a lot of work with adults also. And in particular with adults in hospice who may have lost some ability for communication or might be at the end of their life and wanting, not having the same capabilities they had, but still having a lot of stories inside of them, right? And so it gives them a very positive activity to do that where they can still express themselves and they might have more limited ability to communicate with their family even. And so making images sometimes is like a way for them to explore a life story or to communicate things to family through the images. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of applications. Yeah. It's helpful to all sorts of people.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so that's basically all that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's like anything else that you think would be particularly like beneficial to share, that would be great.
Sure. Is there anything else that you're curious about in just hearing what I've talked about?
Well, I'm also interested in like medicine and potentially becoming like a doctor in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And maybe like how, besides like hospice and that type of care, like how you've seen or you've heard of art therapy helping like different types of like, people in mm-hmm. hospitals or like something like that. Or like,
yeah. Sure, absolutely. Within New York City alone, New York Presbyterian Hospital has at least two child hematology, oncology, pediatric units that use art therapy extensively. Mount Sinai has that as well, the Kravitz Children's Hospital. See, at New York Presbyterian, it's Morgan Stanley, and there's another, Comanskey. And then Montefiore Hospital has the Children's Hospital at Montefiore. And they all have Child Life, and Child Life are people who specifically work with children around medical procedures and trauma. And they have art therapists or music therapists. And it's really, really helpful for kids who are having procedures, who have to have chemo or surgery. You know, they have so much intrusive medical procedure with medical staff that the art therapy staff can come in and offer them choice, as opposed to, you need to have your blood pressure taken, you need another shot, you need this, you need that. The art therapist comes in offering, what do you want to do, right? And then there's also sometimes some medical art therapists will actually have them using medical supplies in their art making as a way to kind of take some control back over all this medical intervention. So yeah, art therapy can be used quite a bit in medical support and as a part of medical support teams, for sure. Yeah. And I have a colleague at Lesley University, where I'm doing my PhD, who is she's in Texas now, but she's designing an art therapy, an arts-based pain assessment for kids that's working using a computer-based app for them, rather than what's your pain on a scale of 1 to 10. It's using symbols to identify pain in a more arts-based way than just this kind of traditional sort of number scoring or other kinds of traditional pain assessments. So yeah, there's a lot going on with stuff like that.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And there's a lot also going on with virtual art therapy, you know, the idea of virtual reality and pain mitigation, like people who may have chronic pain, like Parkinson's or MS, they can experience an avatar, a virtual self, and have an experience of less pain because of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And I would just say, you know, to add to this, because I know you're going to be using it as information, that art therapy can be found in all kinds of settings. Like I mentioned, medical art therapy, hospice care, schools. There are a number of schools that have art therapy as an option for kids who may need some support in the schools, whether it's elementary or high school or middle school. Prisons, Rikers Island, other prisons within the New York system and other systems, nursing homes, homeless shelters, after school programs, museums, you name it. There are art therapy programs kind of in all kinds of settings. And the interns at NYU have the opportunity to be placed in any number of kinds of settings when they do their practicum training, their internships. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, this very much expanded my view on art therapy.
Good. And then basically the training for an art therapist is generally a 2 or 3 year master's degree training, and that leads to a licensure process. There is a license in New York State to practice, and in other states, it's often linked to a counseling degree. So it's generally a licensed practice that you have to go through a master's program to become licensed.
All right, awesome. And then, so I guess one like final question is just relating to my organization and how you think that I could use some of like your findings in art therapy and just some general like principles in art therapy to help like the people that we work with.
Well, I mean, beyond using art as therapy, right? Art as a healing modality. I mean, unless you wanted to bring in an art therapist to work with you, but you can, art is inherently healing, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you are organizing for the people that you work with, some kind of group art activity is always really helpful, bearing in mind that, you're not therapists, right? Yeah. But there is the whole idea that art itself and engaging in it is a communal activity, and it creates bonds between people and a feeling of purposefulness. And it's generally something that most people like to engage in. So I would look at it that way. Yeah. As art as a healing activity. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah. Very, very excited for you with this initiative that you've taken. And I hope that it continues and that, that you have success with it.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And I'm going to just follow up with this call for like any referrals for like people like in your network that would be interested in speaking with me, or any organizations that would be interested in speaking with me or like partnering with my organization, just because I don't want to put you on the spot right now.
Yeah, sure. I can think of a number of, I get emails from certain organizations about arts and healing, and I can put you in touch with, some other like music therapists or drama therapists or other modalities if that's interesting to you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So let me think about that. And if you send me a follow-up email, I'll see if I can give you some directions to move in with that.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Sophia. It's really lovely to meet you.
You too.
All right.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.